Good morning, everyone. The Regulatory Reform and Economic Development Subcommittee meeting will come to order. Amy, please call the roll.
Chair Saroy.
Here.
Vice Chair Yeager.
Here.
Democratic Ranking Member Casillo.
Here.
Representatives Amnesty, Chamberlain.
Here.
Gant.
Here.
Holcomb, excused. Maggard.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
McFarland.
Here.
Mello. Nixon. Robinson.
Here.
Schoaf. Silvers. Valdez.
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you very much, Amy. Members, we have 8 bills on our agenda today. If you're a member of the audience wishing to speak on a bill, please fill out an appearance card and turn it into a member of the sergeant staff, and we'll get you lined up. For the purposes of our agenda, please show that House Bill 579, Use of Private Providers for Plans Review and Inspection, is temporarily postponed. Members will now move to PCS for House Bill 189, Gaming Control, by Representative Salzman. Good morning, Representative Salzman. You are recognized to explain the bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing my bill this morning. HB 189 is about gaming regulatory reform and economic development. Basically, it strengthens criminal penalties associated with illegal gaming in the state. Additionally, it will recognize the Florida Gaming Controls Commission as a state law enforcement agency for officer impersonation. It also will exempt Florida Gaming Controls Commission from a certain chapter, which includes statutes that govern the bidding process for state agencies. Basically, illegal gambling is happening across the state, and the criminal penalties currently in place for having illegal gaming machines is simply a misdemeanor. The way this bill does is it creates step-ups into felony charges so that we can actually go in and seize this equipment and potentially stop illicit activity. That's the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Salzman, for that explanation. Members, are there questions on the bill? We have several questions. We'll begin with Ranking Member Casillo, followed by Representative Valdez.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I have about 3 questions.
Yeah, we'll take them one at a time. Yes, sir.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Representative. How you doing?
Good morning.
Okay. My question is, I wrote these down so I wouldn't forget, though. What are you doing now to provide clarity to the commission investigators as to what is legal and what isn't legal?
Representative Salzman.
Thank you. So currently, what is illegal is having an illegal machine. Currently, we don't explain in statute certain levels of if you're a manager, if you work there, if you own the equipment. There's not a lot of clarity there. This bill creates clarity. The Gaming Commission is new, as we all know. It was created recently, and so there's a lot of things that we're working through to establish parameters and legalities, and then also who is the authority in that. So this bill creates clarity not only for the commission but also for the facilities that have these machines.
Thank you. Ranking Member for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the bill provide that an individual working at one of these locations would be committing a felony, whether they knew the location may be in violation of the 1,000-foot restriction?
Representative Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First offenses on all counts are not felonies, period. This bill is a stepping order. It's basically, we have a lot of people that have these machines. They go in, they say these machines are illegal. The owners say, oh, I didn't know, I'm so sorry. 6 months later, the machine's still there. So they're not, the misdemeanor penalty is not high enough to keep them from doing these activities. So even the way that this bill is written and current statute, that is not possible.
Thank you.
Ranking Member.
Thank you, Chair. And what is the process on site for law enforcement to determine if, in fact, these games are illegal so that the arresting officer makes the determination when they make an arrest?
Representative Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So they work in partnership with the Florida Gaming Commission. The Florida Gaming Commission would create investigations, and all of this information would be laid out well before they come into the establishment. That's part of why this bill is so important, because it's hard to get law enforcement to come into a facility and start seizing equipment over a misdemeanor. So we've had a lot of issues where we know illegal gaming activity is taking place, which is also encouraging other illegal activities such as drug sales and human trafficking. We have specific cases of that happening several times in Florida. So this bill is just putting some parameters around it to provide teeth so law enforcement can actually partner with the Gaming Commission and follow through with these investigations that have taken place.
Representative Valdez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning. Good morning, Rep. Salzman.
Good morning.
Does the commission provide information to individuals questioning whether these games are legal or illegal?
Chair Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is illegal, yes. The short answer is yes, but you cannot use money in a machine. You can't use money to get money. You can pay to play a game that's just to put your name on a board, but everybody knows you can't put money in a machine to try to get money back. Quarter slots, all those things, they're all, unless you have a license, it's illegal.
Representative Valdez for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the commission providing any clarity to the public in reference to that?
Representative Salzman.
To my knowledge, no. But the public is not the one that gets in trouble. It's the establishment, the owners, the managers, specifically.
Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Does the commission provide any information on its website about the legality of the games?
Representative Salzman.
The short answer is yes, ma'am.
Representative Valdez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, do you have on the website a specific definition of a slot machine and gaming device with authority to define them?
Representative Salzman.
I would say short answer, yes, but to give you an absolute, I would have to go look. I think that what we should probably do is have you partner with the Gaming Commission and go through that. This bill also, which I did not mention, creates a funding source for the hotline, the gambling hotline. And so there's a lot of stuff that they will have on there just because we want to provide consumers with information, not necessarily for what's legal or not legal, but how do you get help if you feel like you have an addiction problem. So I think that what you're looking for is there or will be there once this passes, but I can partner you with them so we can make sure that, if there's something we need to add, I can speak for them. I know that we'll be willing to do that.
Mm-hmm. All right, members, what I'm going to do is there's several members with questions. So just as a reminder, we're going to we'll go into a second round of questions if needed. Thank you, Representative Valdez.
Thank you,
Representative Gant, good morning. You're recognized for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning. Representative Salzman, who determines if an employee is functioning as a manager?
Representative Salzman.
Thank you. In this bill, it explains, it clarifies that someone acting as a manager would be the person in charge of the establishment, whoever is running the establishment for whatever, wherever they're at. So if you're there and you're not with keys and opening the door and running a schedule, then you're not managing. That was an example. That doesn't say that specifically in the bill.
Representative Gant for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so my clarification or making that question a little more clear, would the state attorney's office that is prosecuting this case determine who the managers are, or would the arresting police officers determine that?
Representative Salzman, you're welcome to try to answer that.
I do not have that answer.
Representative Gant for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So because we don't know who would be the manager or who would determine who the manager is, how would a person be prosecuted under this bill if we don't know who determines who the manager, like, what kind of clarity does this bill provide law enforcement, whether it's the police officer or the state attorney?
Representative Salzman.
Thank you. Going back to my previous answer, we define what a manager is in the bill itself. So we would go back to the definition of what it means to be a manager. I can read that if you would like. Okay.
We can continue. Why don't we ask one additional question? I believe a representative from the Gaming Commission is here, or perhaps we may glean some more information through public testimony. But I do want to keep the agenda moving forward, and there are other members with questions. Representative Gant, you're recognized for a question, followed by Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I saw the definition and I read it, and so my hesitation, which is why I'm asking, is whether the state attorney's office would make that determination based on the investigation done by the police, so that employees who are just there and may be given a specific role that day won't be considered the manager. So that's why I'm asking for clarity on how that's determined. So we can have that follow-up conversation.
Representative Salzman.
Thank you. Gaming Commission's whispering in my ear. The court makes that determination, but the arresting officer would be the initial.
All right. Thank you, Representative Gant. Representative McFarland, you recognize the question.
Just kidding, that's House staff. I didn't look behind me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Representative Salzman.
Good morning.
I realize a lot of our questioning is focused around the penalty and the judicial aspect of this bill. But as we sit on the Regulatory Reform Committee, and I notice this bill is going to the Appropriations Committee and then Judiciary after this, maybe could you just remind us of the regulatory requirements that we are adding through this bill,
Representative
which is
Salzman.
Usually under our purview on this committee.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. Representative Salzman.
Interesting pointed question. basically, this bill is creating or it's codifying who oversees this stuff, which is the Gaming Commission. It also it names the Gaming Commission as the authority over some dollars that would be seized, and it also points to other agencies that oversee the dollars for the Victims Fund. And it preempts local regulation of illegal gambling to the state. I'm going to keep him. Can I keep him in my pocket?
Representative McFarland, did you have an additional question? Ranking Member Casello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of simple ones. Does the commission provide information to individuals questioning whether these games are legal or illegal? Are they providing any clarity to the public?
Representative Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question. They currently do, and they even have phone numbers you can call to get clarification, but it is all listed on their website as well.
Ranking Member Casello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I read the definition, the current definition is as to what is a slot machine is convoluted and confusing as to what is legal and is illegal. Won't this legislation penalize individuals with a felony for uncertainty of whether they are legal or not?
Representative Salzman.
My short answer would be no, but it would also, if you look at how we did it in the bill, that's why it's so long, we did steps. Like, if you did this, the original charge is a misdemeanor, but if you do this five times, it's this. If you do it and you have, you're trafficking, it's that. So, here comes staff.
You can also read that if they're not authorized by a paramilitary facility or tribal compact.
He has a very simple line he wanted me to read. Slot machines that are not operated by a licensed paramutual facility or in accordance with a tribal compact or specific law are illegal in Florida. But like I said originally, basically, if you put money in the machine hoping to get money back, that's gambling.
Thank you, Chief.
That's in the staff analysis. I apologize.
All right. Members, any additional questions? Representative Valdez, followed by Representative Gant.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So, are you aware of any other jurisdictions that have maybe increased penalties such as we're doing in this bill and have seen successful in reducing crime, and if so, where? Have some examples.
Representative Salzman.
I don't have an answer to that question.
Thank you. Representative Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding lines 288 to 293, the preemption portion of this bill, what is the rationale or the state interest for preempting it to the state as opposed to working in conjunction with local municipalities that already have ordinances in place?
Representative Salzman.
I believe this bill is supposed to create some clarity across the board for the state. You shouldn't go into one county and it be illegal there and go into another county and it not be the same. So this is providing a uniform jurisdiction, a uniform way of prosecution. A lot of these cases these aren't going to be mom and pops that are getting in trouble. These are going to be the people that are intentionally breaking the law and they have these illegal slot machines in there. And that's just a start. A majority of them are doing major crime rings, and that is just one of those signs of a major crime ring. So if you have different jurisdictions across the state having different rules and different signage and different clarifications, it's going to be really hard for you to do a good conviction on something we're really looking for. This isn't about the everyday user. This actually, we help the everyday user because we're providing real funding to the hotline and funding to people that have addiction problems. What this is about are the people that are doing the big crime rings. That's why we have such a step from misdemeanor, felony. It's not about the person or the one time. This is about the ongoing offenses that we haven't been able to crack down on.
All right, members, we're going to move into public comment cards at this time. We have two members of the audience who have public testimony. The first is Henry Mahler, Florida Gaming Commission. Mr. Trombetta, are you going to speak?
Yes, sir. Henry Mahler is, I'm here on the behalf of the Gaming Commission. Henry Mahler is our legislative affairs director. He's filling out a new comment card for me. I'm happy to address any questions, but also wanted to make a comment.
You're recognized, sir.
Thank you. So my name is Lou Trombetta. I'm the executive director of the Gaming Commission. I want to first thank our sponsor. I think you did a great job. I took a few notes, and I just want to address some of the questions that have come up. The first one deals with clarity, both in the definition of a slot machine and what the Gaming Commission is doing. The state of Florida has a great definition of what a slot machine is. This bill does not touch that. As was represented, at its most basic, if you put money in a device and you're trying to get something out, whether it's even just more plays, more free plays, it doesn't matter if there's skill involved. It's a slot machine, according to Florida law. Slot machines are legal in very specific places. That also goes to the preemption thing. So there's 8 licensed paramutual facilities, 4 in Miami, 4 in Broward, and then there's the Seminole Tribe properties. A slot machine anywhere else is illegal. There's also an amusement machine section that allows, think of Chuck E. Cheese's, because these devices, think of like a skee ball game. You roll the ball goes up, and you win a ticket. You're putting money into the machine, you're getting a ticket that you can redeem for something. That would be a slot machine, but for a specific exemption that allows that type of device. This bill doesn't touch those things. This bill goes after the businesses, as was expressed, that are purposely and willfully violating Florida law by operating illegal slot machine businesses around the state. Florida, as the question about other jurisdictions that have tried to address this. So the best example is New Jersey, Nevada, Ohio. Lots of other states are dealing with this. Lots of other states have had success. Florida has had success. The current definition of a slot machine was amended in 2013 following a rash of cases out of Jacksonville involving illegal adult arcades or slot machine businesses. The definition was created to capture a lot of activity that at that time was seen as a loophole. So the definition then, and there was a big cut down on the number of these businesses operating in the state. In 2017, I believe, or 19, it was actually lowered from felonies to misdemeanors, and we're in the state that we're in now, where these things have flourished. So all we're trying to do is raise the floor back up to felonies to try to cut back on these businesses that we're seeing all over the place. As far as information that the Gaming Commission does, we have stressed an importance in providing information both to the public and to law enforcement throughout the state. We do it through the website. We have pamphlets that our law enforcement team has made up that try to boil down what a slot machine is in sort of the way I said it, but it actually refers to the statute more than what I'm saying, that we can give out to people, that we do give out to people. When we get reports of illegal activity, we send notices to businesses saying, hey, you may not be aware, but you're conducting illegal activity. And then we're available for them if they have questions to try to walk people through this. We aren't trying to pull something over people's heads and get the innocent actors in trouble. What we're finding is that there's a spectrum where there's truly innocent actors and there's truly guilty actors and there's people in between. And what we think this bill does is really help the state go after this activity that has really flourished over the past few years as the penalties have dropped. And then the final point is the preemption. What we're finding and one of the difficulties that's causing some of the lack of clarity is that some local jurisdictions have taken upon themselves to try to respond to this problem. And they do so by regulating it, by essentially charging a fee, and they'll provide a license to the business. Well, they're providing a license to an illegal business. So what we're trying to do under state law, gambling is prohibited by state constitution. There's limited exceptions. Slot machines are defined in statute, and a local county or city can't make what the constitution prohibits legal. That's what we're trying to address clarity-wise with the preemption language. So again, I thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank the sponsor, and I'll be here happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much, sir. Next public speaker is Jonathan Zacher, an opponent of the bill. Sir, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry for my handwriting. Zacher.
Zacher, thank you. Yeah.
Good morning, members of the committee, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is Jonathan Zacher. I represent the Amusement Machine Association of Florida, and unfortunately, I stand in opposition to the bill the way it's currently drafted. Representative, I apologize. We've tried to have some time to meet with you, and unfortunately, until this point, we haven't had an opportunity to sit down and discuss some of the issues, and we look forward to having that opportunity during the next committee stops, if possible. I'm going to name a few issues that we end up having when we were reviewing and taking a look at this, but there were several points that were raised, so if it's piecemeal as far as how I approach it, I apologize. There were a few things that were named that I want to make sure are fresh in people's mind. The definition of slot machine that you had that was mentioned that is very clear, I think just in the statements that you heard, it's not, because you've heard the same expression from the Gaming Control Commission. There's truly innocent actors, and there's truly guilty actors. Well, this bill right here is going to penalize people heavier. What happens to those truly innocent actors? You're talking about a punitive measure that's going to end up cracking down on those truly innocent folks. I understand the Gaming Commission is doing the best they can to get information out. But with getting that information out, it's not an easy task. As all of you that are in the state understand, this is partially a transient state for a lot of snowbirds. This is a state where we have a huge population. Being able to educate them on the nuances of gaming is very, very difficult. Some of you have sat on these types of committees before and heard presentations from the Compact, from the Gaming Commission, which is still in its infancy and figuring out even what it's looking at. I commend them. I've sat as a regulator before myself and spoken before committees like this as a regulator. When you end up looking at the job that they take on, it's incredibly difficult. But right now, when you've only got an agency that's in its infancy, that's been around for a year and a half, for them to say they truly understand what's going on in the dynamics of an entire state that's this diverse, well, it's probably a little early for that. So what we ask is if there's data to end up showing what they're saying is accurate, not because of an attempt to be inaccurate by them, but just because it's early on. Can we do a study of some kind? Can we look at the effects that this has? We've heard mention of violent crimes or other issues that are having, drugs, different things like that. Well, if they're having success in closing these areas, and if this has been on the books for such a lengthy period of time, certainly we can present data that shows that there's been an overall reduction of those elements by stopping gaming in certain jurisdictions. I haven't seen that data presented. It probably exists. I'm not going to pretend to be the end-all, be-all in knowing every number that's out there, but I think that would be an important piece of education for you all. Additionally, we ended up having a presentation that I think was done before this very committee just within the last few months, and in that you had law enforcement that stood before you and talked to you a little bit about some of the challenges that they have. With this bill, you're putting an awful big task on them. I believe the gentleman, and unfortunately I don't remember which jurisdiction it was, I think from Sarasota, that was sitting all the way to the right, I was here for that committee, spoke about how his team that ends up working in this area also does vice. That's what umbrella this falls under. So what are they gonna do with those law enforcement officers that are currently going towards drug offenses that vice currently handles? Well, they're gonna deviate some of those folks and they're gonna go towards this. There's no new FTEs, there's no new money for those folks. So law enforcement that's stretched thin in these areas, now we're gonna have to focus on that area. And we still don't know if this is going to accomplish its goal by increasing these penalties. My point is, I just would like to see the data that backs it up before we end up increasing penalties and possibly capturing what the Gaming Commission themselves are saying innocent actors could be out there just because they don't understand nuances of gaming.
Sir, if you would...
I'll go as fast as I can, sir. If you give me one more minute, I'll wrap it up. Is that fair? Okay.
Sir. Please conclude your remarks.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, the idea, there was a question about state putting information out there. I've been to the website before. It says generally slot machines are illegal, but only refers to the statute. There's not specificity there. And I think there's going to be a lot of money cost with this, as well as a lot of innocent citizens that just don't understand the nuances of gaming. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you, sir. Members, we are now, that concludes public testimony. We're now in debate on the bill. Is there debate? Representative Valdez, followed by Representative Gant.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Salzman, I'm really concerned about where the penalties are going. If you think about, we just heard from the commission themselves, and you actually said that, you know, you're working through, the department is working through the legalities. And I believe that this bill is pulling the cart before the horse, because we don't have a lot of data to show us where these bad actors are, who, and be a little bit more thoughtful. If you think about it, when you have the term, the definition of manager, where we talk about leaving a person in charge of the establishment should the individual not be there, that could be a bartender that is paying their way to school. And something happens, they don't know. They're just a simple bartender. Manager went, hey, take care of shop, and I'll be right back. Something were to happen, that's the innocent person that I'm looking at, that I'm thinking about, that individual that's working their way through college and not having any malintent. Those are the ones that I'm really concerned about with the specificities of the penalties of this bill. And, you know, as a representative on this committee, I have to say this, and we're in Florida. Florida's a gaming state. I mean, just recently, I don't know if you've seen how many upticks of the commercials that have come out since, what, last month? Every 20 minutes, you see that gaming commercial on there, enticing people to come and go and participate in the gamings, in the games that we have. So I'm really concerned about where we're headed with this. We seem to be penalizing a lot of more people in this legislative session. Every bill that I've seen just about is increasing a penalty to make somebody go to jail and hold them to a certain level that quite frankly, until we don't have an infrastructure in place, and I don't believe that this bill provides that infrastructure for the gaming for the commission to have a better foundation of really and truly what it is that they're dealing with, it's really difficult for me to support something of this magnitude, considering some of the folks that I described. So for this reason, I am down on the bill today. Maybe as it moves through its processes, by the time it gets to the floor, it might be a different bill. We can take into consideration those types of individuals that are working in these establishments. For whatever reason, they're there, but they're working. And I'm really concerned about what we might be able to do to some of these individuals that are just really hardworking Floridians trying to make it by. And then have these unintended consequences. So for today, I'm down on the bill. Hopefully, by the time it gets to the floor, it'll be a different one. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Valdez. Representative Gant, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when we look at bills, we look at the bills in totality, and we can't just parse out specific parts of it just because it may not be arguably pertinent to this committee. And we also use our life experiences to guide us. And as a criminal defense attorney, it worries me about the ambiguity in regards to manager or who determines who the manager is. Because if the police make a determination and they put specific things in their report, the state attorney office usually relies on that report. They obviously do their own due diligence in deciding whether to file a case or not, but just providing that clarity is needed for who makes that determination. That's one part. And then I had a couple more questions on, we're going from a misdemeanor to a third degree felony. And on line 150, it says, at the time of violation, the person is acting as a manager. Well, what's a violation? If they were arrested before and that case was subsequently dropped because they weren't a manager or they were an employee that got caught up, would that be a violation just because it's an arrest? Or do they have to have a conviction? And if they do have to have a conviction, does that conviction have to be an adjudication, or does a withhold of adjudication actually count? So there are so many things that I have questions about when we're talking about third-degree felonies, potentially 5 years of a person's life going to prison. Second-degree felony, 15 years. So looking at what we're tasking our law enforcement to do and not giving them clarity, and then having citizens subjected to having a pending case that might last however long because they don't really have direction, they can't get a job, or they get jobs and get fired because there's a pending case. It's just so many variables that are still left open with the language that I see in this bill. I'm open to having a conversation about clarifying that if you'd like. So today I will be down on the bill because that one part, and then the preemption, I'm generally just always against preemption. I think we should work with local municipalities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no further debate, Representative Salzman, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I'll waive close.
Thank you. Having waived close, Amy, please call the roll on PCS for House Bill 189, Gaming Control by Representative Salzman, and report the vote.
Chair Saroy?
Yes.
Vice Chair Yeager?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Casello?
No.
Representatives Amnesty, Chamberlain, Gant?
No.
Holcomb, excused. Maggard?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes, today.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mello? Nixon?
No.
Robinson?
Yes.
Shove?
Yes.
Silvers?
No.
Valdez?
Nope.
Seven yes, five no.
So the bill reported favorably. Thank you very much. Next, we will move to House Bill 535, Low Voltage Alarm Systems, by Representative Snyder. Representative Snyder, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Here today to present House Bill 535, Low Voltage Alarm Systems. The purpose of this bill is to clarify the statutes that were passed by this body in 2017, and we're specifically addressing a recent court case and ensuring that we have clear standards for the permitting and zoning processes for these low voltage alarm systems. And Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there questions of representatives? Representative Gant, you're recognized for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative Snyder. I hope you get better soon. My first question is regarding the preemption. Can local governments regulate this subject area in their bill?
Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question, Representative. So currently, the state does preempt the permitting requirements with these low-voltage fences. The state has set, you know, what the voltage will be, what the signage requirements are, and where these fences can be installed. In this recent court case, there was a question on what would happen in mixed use, and there was a municipality that where ultimately there were some issues because of the way that the statutes were currently written. And so without the ability to list the ever-changing zoning requirements, what we're doing today in this bill is clarifying that these are not allowed in residential or multifamily zoned locations, and that there was an additional piece that there does not have to be a safety fence on both sides of the low-voltage alarm system.
Representative Gant for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, obviously, you know, I represent Miami-Dade County, and it's a smorgasbord of different zonings. So how would that look in an urban area if someone wanted to get a low-voltage fence and it's an area where it's near a school and kids frequent that area, but it's mixed zoning? How would that work?
Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question. If it was a residential or multi-family home property, that fence would not be allowed to be there. But just to back up a little bit about, you know,
who uses these fences, and you know, what are some of those safety precautions around them that you mentioned? There's about over 500 businesses currently in the state, many of which are storage facilities or businesses with large fleets. And one of the safety requirements of the low voltage system is that there has to be a fence on the exterior. So if there were to be kids, and the way the voltage currently is set, it's safe to animals. There's an international standard set around this, but there is an exterior fence and very clear marked warning signs. So if there was ever, you know, even if a child was walking through a commercial zone, it would, there are safety precautions around making sure that folks aren't inadvertently, you know, affected by these.
Representative Gant for one final question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding the fence, is the perimeter fence required in the entire area where the low voltage fence is, or is it just like one part of the low, where the, you get what I'm saying?
Yep.
Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. As the statutes are currently written, and we are not touching that, the entire perimeter of the low voltage alarm system has to be enclosed by that fence or a wall structure.
Thank you. Members, are there any additional questions? Seeing no additional questions, we'll now move to public testimony. We have one appearance card. Cindy Lundy of Amarok waves in support. Members, we're now in debate. Is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Snyder, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wave close.
Having wave close, Amy, please call the roll on House Bill 535, Low Voltage Alarm Systems, by Representative Snyder, and report the vote.
Chair Saroy?
Yes.
Vice Chair Yeager?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Casello?
Yes.
Representatives Amnesty? Chamberlain?
Yes.
Gant?
Yes.
Holcomb excused. Maggard?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes, ma'am.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mello? Nixon? Robinson?
Yes.
Shove?
Yes.
Silvers? Valdez?
Yes.
We'll show that bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
Members, next we'll move to House Bill 577, Spaceport Territories, by Representative Griffs. Representative, you're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Vice Chair Yeager, Ranking Member Casello, for the opportunity this morning. This is HB 577. This bill, in its simplest form, expands the footprint for Space Florida to include the Homestead Air Force Reserve Base and the Tyndall Air Force Base. By leveraging Homestead and Tyndall into the Florida Spaceport System territory, Space Florida creates optionality for the industry and military and expanding regional development options in the areas. That is the bill, sir.
Members, are there questions of the sponsor? Representative Valdez, you're recognizing questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative. Why those two Air Force? What makes those Air Force bases the candidate?
Representative Griffs, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question, Rep. Both strategically located. Tyndall Air Force Base, which was heavily damaged during Hurricane Michael, is under a $5 billion rebuild, considered the base of the future. Homestead, after Andrew in 92, has been on a rebuild since that point, and they're both strategically located within areas of the state, which can help with resiliency.
Awesome. Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Gant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, being that it's my county, what is the county's position on this?
Thank you, Chair.
You're recognized.
All counties are supportive of this, yes.
Members, additional questions? Seeing no additional questions, we have Lindsey Pierce, Base Florida, waving in support. Members, is there debate? Is there debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Griffs, you're recognized to close.
Wave close, sir.
Having waved closed on his bill, Amy, please call the roll on House Bill 577, Spaceport Territory, and report the vote.
Chair Saroy?
Yes.
Vice Chair Yeager?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Casello?
Yes.
Representatives Amnesty? Chamberlain?
Yes.
Gant?
Yes.
Holcomb excused. Maggard?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mello? Nixon? Robinson?
Yes.
Shove?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
13-0.
Thank you, members. We'll show that bill reported favorably.
Thank you, members.
Representative. Members, next we'll move to House Bill 665, Expedited Approval of Residential Building Permits by Representative McLean. Good morning, Chair McLean. You're recognized.
Good morning, Chair Saroy, Vice Chair Yeager, and Ranking Member Casello, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be able to introduce House Bill 665 to you. Mr. Chairman, I'll explain the bill, and then there is a strike all, but I think the bill is and the strike are pretty much the same. It was just a lot of negotiating the finer points of the bill. So the bill would require local governments to create a process to expedite the issuance of building permits based on a preliminary plat. The bill provides allows for an applicant to contract to sell but cannot transfer ownership of a residential structure or building located in the preliminary plat. And the bill would require all local governments to create a master building permit process. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Do you want to go ahead and explain the strike all?
Sure. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, again, the strike all is pretty much the same as the original bill. We've worked diligently on this with all of the parties for several months, actually, and finally somewhat brought it in for a landing, I think, in the last several days. Both parties negotiating in good faith. The bill would still require local governments to create a two-step process to advance the issuance of building permits prior to the final plat. The goal of the bill would to increase much-needed housing supply throughout the state of Florida. To achieve the goal, the bill requires an applicant, builder, a developer, or home builder to legally indemnify the local government, its employees, and agents. In addition, the bill requires an applicant to obtain a performance bond up to 130% of the unfinished improvements. And the bill would promote safety to the consumer because a certificate of occupancy couldn't be issued until the final plat was recorded. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you very much, Representative McLean. Members, are there questions? Are there questions? Seeing no questions, we'll move to, we need to adopt the amendment first. I'm sorry, no, we have public testimony on the amendment. Yep. We have two cards. In public testimony on the amendment. Charles Chapman, Florida League of Cities, is an opponent of the bill. Mr. Chapman, you're recognized.
Honorable Chair Saroy, Vice Chair Yeager, Ranking Member Casello, and committee members, good morning. Thank you for this opportunity to share our concerns on the House Bill 665, as well as my comments are germane to the delete all amendment that you are considering. We are very appreciative of Representative McLean's work with us on resolving our concerns. However, we still have a little bit more work to do. Specifically, the language in the bill addressing vested rights does not track with the established tests in court cases. It is our goal to clarify the language with the sponsor, and he has agreed to accept proposed language from us to remedy that issue in order to keep the courts from having two different standards as it relates in weighing vested rights. We're committed to working with the sponsor to resolve the issue, but until this is resolved, unfortunately, we will stand opposed to the bill and the amendment today.
Thank you. Our next card is Jeff Scala, Florida Association of Counties. Sir, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Jeff Scala, Florida Association of Counties. And first and foremost, want to thank Chair McLean for his generosity and time, listening to our concerns, suggestions on the bill. We've come a long way in trying to make sure this program works at the local level. As we do move through the process, there's one area in defining who's eligible for the program. We're talking about large-scale development subdivisions and looking towards who would be qualified as a qualified applicant in those programs. But thank you for all the work on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, we're now in debate on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I did turn on a speaker card.
Yep, not. We're on the amendment now, and we'll be back on the bill in just a moment.
You're much better than I am.
Members, we're now in debate on the amendment. Debate on the amendment. Seeing no debate, Chair McLean, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
I'll wait close.
Thank you, Chair McLean. Members, all those in favor of the adoption of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. We'll show the amendment adopted. Members, we're now back on the bill as amended, and we'll move to public testimony. Christopher Strandberg, Americans for Prosperity, waves in support. Tiffany Garling, Florida Chamber of Commerce, waves in support. John Pasqualone, Florida Fire Marshals and Inspectors Association, is an opponent of the bill. Sir, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, John Pasqualone, Florida Fire Marshals and Inspectors Association. And just as the bill as written at this point, we are opposed, simply because when you start accumulating construction debris and material on a job site with no fire protection, and the way we understand it currently, and we'll work with a sponsor, we have more stops, and we just understand that you can't put infrastructure in before plat approval. So we need hardened roads to be able to access any potential construction sites, and then we need a water supply for firefighting needs. But I think we can work through that. But at this point, we just want to be on the record in opposition, and we'll be happy to work with the sponsor. Thank you, sir.
Kim Dinkins, 1,000 Friends of Florida, is an opponent of the bill. Good morning. You're recognized.
Good morning. My name is Kim Dinkins with 1,000 Friends of Florida, and I have not yet had an opportunity to meet with Representative McLean, the sponsor, so hopefully we'll be able to work through some of the issues that I'm going to bring up here in a minute. But this is essentially a local government preemption bill that's effectively an unfunded mandate, although it doesn't prohibit local governments from recovering fees for expedited permitting prior to a final plat. Doing so is sure to strike the ire of the applicants that the bill is intended to benefit. Particularly concerning is the broad applicability. It'll require program development for about 40 of our 67 counties and more than 20% of cities and municipalities, each with different development patterns and infrastructure needs. A pre-platted subdivision might include 5 lots or 5,000 lots. It could be adjacent to water and wastewater lines or 10 miles away, but the local utilities will have to respond. There's no requirement that the project is urban infill within a planned service area or in the vicinity of capital projects and utilities, which are standard tools to ensure that the infrastructure is constructed in an efficient and cost-effective manner. In recent years, the legislature has prioritized funding for projects such as septic to sewer, wastewater service expansion, and stormwater improvements to protect water quality. And those funds are distributed to local governments to implement projects based on their needs and planning horizons, which reflect the development patterns, again, in their communities. This type of cart before the horse development has the potential to impact a community's ability to effectively complete those committed projects due to limited human and financial resources. We have the expanded bonding requirement and indemnification section, but also places a good deal of risk on the local governments that might be left holding the bag if a developer decides to abandon the project. The money is there, but they will be responsible for ensuring that the improvements are made. Local governments that are able and willing to take on this risk are already able to do that. There's also a risk to the homeowner who's contracted with a builder, perhaps even before any state or regional agencies have agency permits have been issued. The pre-plat's not an exact representation of the subdivision, so they're relying on a proposed lot size and configuration, and are subject to the developer's timeline for final plat submittal before they can move into their home. At the end of the day, the bill puts the developers in the driver's seat and creates an undue burden for local governments. We hope that you'll vote it down.
Thank you very much.
Today.
Lisa Miller, Private Provider Association of Florida, is a proponent of the bill.
Thank you. You're recognized. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry about that last snafu. Just to give you a bigger perspective on this bill and Representative McLean's great work, the Private Provider Association of Florida is a group of great inspection companies that work collaboratively with the Building Officials Association of Florida and your municipal building officials. You know, I come from the insurance background, Florida's former deputy insurance commissioner, and I got involved with the private provider groups because a delayed permit inspection is a delayed claim. A delayed claim is an expensive claim, and as we know, expensive claims drive rates. So there's a connection between the two, and any attempt for us to collaboratively have these building permits either on the front end of a development or during a development or on the back end is a step in the right direction for our state. So we wholeheartedly support this bill or any of the bills that are in the process that deal with expediting permits, having collaboration between the building officials and the private industry who's trying to help them bolster what they do every day. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Edward Briggs, Highland Homes, waves in support. And Mark Ryan, an opponent of the bill. Mr. Ryan, you're recognized.
Good morning, Chairman, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and members of the committee. I'm Mark Ryan. I'm a retired city manager, having managed three cities in Brevard County for more than 40 years. I want to share some observations concerning this legislation. As shared by the League of Cities, I have concern with the vested rights language within this legislation. As shared by the Fire Marshal Association, this language appears to conflict with the Florida Fire Prevention Code that requires underground water available before any structures are built on site. I also have a concern about the bonding requirement. A local municipal attorney in Brevard County is very knowledgeable in this area, has stated that if this goes bust by the fault of the developer, is the onus is on the city to fix or finish the project. The proposal is for a performance bond to cover those costs. Well, performance bonds aren't easy to call due, and he suggests that you consider a letter of credit from a Florida bank to allow for the local government to make sure the project is completed properly. And lastly, I want to make point that this type of issue, if there is a developer going bust and this letter of credit or bond is used, 130% may not be adequate in the current climate that we're in. I'm building a deck at my home and the prices of the lumber is sky high. So please consider increasing the value of the bond or letter of credit to at least 150%. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, having no further public testimony, we're now in debate. Is there debate? Representative Nixon, followed by Ranking Member Casella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a little concerned just based on the public comment that came on Representative McClain, particularly with the fire marshal as it relates to wanting to ensure we have fire prevention protection for these residents. I am all for addressing the affordable housing crisis and building more homes, but I don't think we need to risk safety and quality just to have more quantity. There's a lot of variables that seemingly need to be worked through. I know you stated that you had spoke with the parties, but clearly there's still some issues needing to be worked through, and for the purposes of that, I'm gonna be down today.
Thank you. Ranking Member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McClain, Chair McClain, this bill has come a long way, and your willingness to work with all the stakeholders is you should be commended for that, and it's just gonna keep getting better. As my fellow firefighters over there, their concerns, I took that into consideration. This arbitrarily sets up local governments to speed up the permitting process. And my concern is that they don't have that manpower to do it. I come from local government, and I can tell you that's always been an issue in the municipalities. But I'm gonna be up on the bill today because your willingness to work with the stakeholders. I'm sure you'll address a lot of the concerns that we heard here this morning. And as you progress through the hearing part of this bill, you'll continue to work with the stakeholders. So today I'm going to be up on it, Chair, and see how it moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Chair Robinson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McClain. This is a great bill. And my county somewhat implements this process, and I'll tell you who this benefits in my county, and it would benefit others in this county, is Habitat for Humanity. They're using it right now in Manatee County. And let's keep in mind, the jurisdiction still approves the preliminary plat. So all we're talking about is the time period between the preliminary plat and the final plat. So the county's already approved the plat. The staff has already reviewed everything. I know we can maybe have the debate on 130% bonding requirements, but that's required at the final plat stage anyway. And when you get a final plat, you still have to put a bond up to build the roads and all the infrastructure. So this just allows folks to get moving, to get their permits issued, and to make sure the process moves more efficiently. So I thank you for this. This is really gonna help out our state, and this is a great bill, and I'm way up on this bill. Thank you.
Seeing no further debate, Chair McClain, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, normally I try not to get frustrated, but I am a little frustrated this morning that three of the people that offered testimony have not been involved in the conversation until just now when they made testimony. So I have not had an opportunity to answer any of those questions. Certainly as it relates to fire and that type of thing, we certainly are going to, you know, again, Representative Robinson's already spoken to that. Most of that's already in place by the time you get ready to start this process. There were some on the bonding requirement. We can have I have no problem if we need to raise that up a little bit, it's fine. We really wanted to set a number just so it, I mean, they could use the number and say, hey, you have to have 300% of, you know, of a bond in place for the improvements, and that would obviously shut down a project. So we're not concerned about that. Some of the Thousand Friends of Florida comments, I think, were somewhat misleading a little bit in the fact that a project would have already, the land use would have already been changed by the time we get to the point of a preliminary project. So some of those things would have been alleviated already as well. I'm willing to work with all those folks. Just a little frustrating that that's the first time I've heard about it was this morning. To the other partners that we've worked with over the summer and up into just into the last few days, I appreciate that. Thank you all for your comments, and I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman McLean. Members, Chairman McLean, having closed on his bill, Amy, please call the roll on House Bill 665 and announce the vote.
Chair Saroy?
Yes.
Vice Chair Yeager?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Casello?
Yes.
Representatives Amnesty? Chamberlain?
Yes.
Gant?
No.
Holcomb, excused. Maggard?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes,
ma'am. McFarland?
Yes.
Mello? Nixon?
No.
Robinson?
Yes.
Shove?
Yes.
Silvers? Yes. Valdez?
Yes.
11-2. So that bill reported favorably.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
Members, will next move to House Bill 1203, Homeowners Associations, by Representative Esposito. Representative Esposito, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. This bill clarifies standards for HOA Board of Directors, prohibits certain fines from becoming liens, limits HOAs from issuing unreasonable fines, and requires a 75% majority of voting members to increase assessments more than 10% year over year. That is the bill.
Thank you, members. Are there questions of Representative Esposito on the bill? As a reminder, we do have two amendments. Representative Gant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question about the fines, are the fines different from special assessments?
Representative Esposito,
For the purposes of your bill.
Representative Esposito.
Thank you. Yes, they're different.
Representative Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would provisions in your bill apply to special assessments, or does it not apply to those, or the amendments?
Representative Esposito.
Thank you, Chair. No, strictly fines, not special assessments.
Members, additional questions? Ranking Member Casello, you're recognized.
Representative, thank you for reaching out to me through the email. Having been an HOA president, and I can tell you it's a lot harder than this job up here. But with that being said, you're eliminating the fines for little things like garbage dispensary out there, holiday lights, that type of thing. What power would an HOA have to have the community come in compliance with the bylaws?
Representative Esposito, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So it's not eliminating the fines, it's just putting parameters specifically on garbage receptacles 24 hours before and 24 hours after, and for holiday decorations within a week after notice has been given. So it's not completely eliminating the ability to fine for those two things.
Thank you. Members, additional questions on the bill? Seeing no additional, Representative Nixon, you're recognized.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Can you, Rep. Esposito, I know there was a portion in there regarding the parking situation. Can you go into a little more detail as it relates to that for me, please?
Representative Esposito, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. The bill details out where that law enforcement vehicles can park on public roads and rights away within the HOA, and it also details out that pickup trucks are allowed in HOAs.
Members, additional questions? Seeing no additional, Representative Nixon, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you.
I have a question in regards to like food trucks. That doesn't, your bill doesn't address that at all, does it?
Representative.
Or trailers.
No, it doesn't allow for that.
Thank you.
Members, we have two amendments on this bill. Representative Esposito, you're recognized to explain amendment number one.
Thank you, Chair. The amendment number one just clarifies that the board must respond to a written request for a detailed accounting within 10 to business days, excuse me, and provides that after a person makes a written request for a detailed accounting, the person may not ask for another detailed accounting within 90 calendar days.
Members, questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, we'll now take up public testimony on the amendment. Having no public testimony, are there members wishing to debate the amendment? Members, we're in debate. Seeing no debate, Representative Esposito, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close.
Having waived close on the amendment, all those in favor of the adoption of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. We'll show that amendment adopted. Representative Esposito, we will now move to amendment number two. You're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. This amendment clarifies that an HOA fine lien does not take precedent over a mortgage lien.
Members, are there questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Representative Maney, good morning. You're recognized for a question.
I thought I understood everything till your last answer. Surely it takes precedence over existing mortgage liens, but does it take precedence over a subsequent mortgage lien?
Representative Esposito, you're recognized.
So current law states that it's strictly for a first mortgage. We are adjusting the statute to be any mortgage. The mortgage in the bank takes precedent over an HOA fine.
Representative Maney for a follow-up.
No further questions. I'm not sure that answers my question, but no further questions.
Thank you, Representative Maney. Members, are there additional questions on this amendment? Seeing no additional questions on the amendment, we'll now move to public testimony. Having no public testimony on the amendment, members, is there any debate? Debate on the amendment. Seeing no debate on the amendment, Representative Esposito, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close.
Having waived close, all those in favor of the adoption of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. We'll show the amendment adopted. We're now back on the bill as amended, and we'll move to public testimony. Travis Moore, Community Associations Institute. Sir, you're recognized. If you could try to limit your comments to about 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll be very, very, very brief. Thank you for the sponsor for taking on HOA issues. They are very dicey and not often fun. We look forward to working with her. We've just emailed this morning a line-by-line breakdown of some of the questions that we have, some technical suggestions that we think we can work through, the lien issue, some of the other issues as it pertains to how that balance between private property rights and also the association, those that live in associations and the agreements they've made to abide by those rules. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Mark Anderson, Community Association Managers, an opponent of the bill. Sir, if you could limit your comments to about 2 minutes.
Yes, sir. Mark Anderson, representing Chief Executive Officers of Management Companies, and we are reluctantly opposing the bill, but we have been working with the bill sponsor. We'll continue to do so on some of those more substantive issues relating to the leaning problems. As Representative Casella mentioned, people move into communities to live there for a quality of life and a cost of living that they like. These rules are the means by which that cost of living and quality of life are protected, and leaning is a major part of that. But there are other issues we'll get to. I know one of the things I would just flag, Mr. Chairman, in closing, is the constitutional concerns in your staff analysis with respect to impairment of contract. These are contracts homeowners sign with their associations to comply with the rules that enable that community to enjoy a quality of life and a cost of living that makes them want to live there. So we are concerned about that. I think everything is entirely fixable here, and we appreciate the opportunity to continue working with you, Representative. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Members, that concludes public testimony. We're now in debate. We're now in debate on the bill. Representative Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concerns is the contracting portion. And from my understanding of reading the bill, that it has to be a preferred vendor list of the association. And given the presentation at the beginning of or during committee weeks on homeowners association and things that occurred with the hammocks, that part of the bill and that language gives me reason to pause, because they had their preferred vendors who were family members and friends who brought in millions of dollars from the homeowners association. And so how does that allow homeowners who, although they consent to be in a HOA, how does that allow them to still have autonomy and sovereignty in their home and who they want to work on their home if a vendor is outside of the list of preferred lists by the association? So that's my major concern with the bill. I do like the language regarding the fines, but the presentation on hammocks was effective enough for me to find a reason to pause in that language. And because of that, I will be down on the bill today, but I know that it's in the process, so that doesn't mean I won't be up by the time it reaches the floor. So I look forward to seeing the revisions as you work with the stakeholders.
Chair Robinson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this great bill. Great news, it goes to potentially civil justice next. So we'll work out a few of these issues. It was a fairly good point, and we'll have to take a look at this that Mr. Anderson brought up, you know, whether or not this is retroactive or not, this bill, because obviously those invite some other considerations we'll have to look at or not. But I love some of the policy positions, and I had, frankly, nothing to do with the drafting of this bill, but I got dinged on one of these things. I had a guest that brought a pickup truck and wasn't able, and I got fined for that, and I thought that was a bit pretentious by my association. So there are things that we unfortunately have to do in the legislature that that associations enact that are just outside the in my view, the normal stream of regulatory ability. So, you know, we'll work on these issues, but I'm up on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Maney, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you. I like the bill. I'm up on it, and I appreciate the short conversation we had. I would like to have more conversation with you on one specific issue. After Surfside collapsed, this legislature passed preventative or remedial legislation requiring homeowners associations to maintain a certain level of reserves and to cause inspections, particularly on condo towers and that sort of thing. To fund that, if an association needs to have a special assessment or to increase the assessment, but they don't get a 75% vote, what happens? You don't have to answer that right now, but I would like to meet with you and talk to you about that specific question. But for today, certainly, I'm very much up on the bill. I like the policies, but I want that clarified.
Thank you, Representative. Members, seeing no further debate, Representative Esposito, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Maney, to address your concern, in the bill, there is language that says an HOA can increase assessments if they can show that a higher increase is necessary for property protection and public safety. So it is accounted for, but I'm happy to have a further discussion with you on clarifying that language. And Representative Gant, to your point about the preferred vendors, the bill also specifies that the HOA cannot restrict homeowners from allowing contractors and vendors that are not on that preferred vendor list access to the community or to their home. So it actually gives the homeowner more choice outside of that preferred vendors list. With that, I close.
Thank you very much, Representative Esposito. Members, will now call the roll on House Bill 1203. Amy, please call the roll and report the vote.
Chair Saroy?
Yes.
Vice Chair Yeager?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Casello?
No.
Representatives Amnesty? Chamberlain?
Yes.
Gant?
No.
Holcomb? Excused. Maggard?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes,
ma'am. McFarland?
Yes.
Mello? Nixon? Robinson?
Yes.
Schoaf? Yes. Silvers? Yes. Valdez?
We'll show that bill reported favorably. Thank you very much, Representative Esposito. Members, we will show House Bill 377, License or Permit to Operate a Vehicle for Hire by Representative Barrero, temporarily postponed. Having no further business on our agenda. I do have a bill. I apologize. That's at 8 o'clock. That's at 8 o'clock meeting. I will pass the gavel. I probably should have done it a long time ago. Vice Chairman Yeager, you have the gavel, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, we will now take up House Bill 293 by Chairman Saroy. Chairman Saroy, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. With your permission, I'll present from my seat.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Good morning, members. House Bill 1203. I'm sorry. Give me just a moment here. Thank you very much, members. I just want to make sure I had the correct bill number in front of me. House Bill 293 is really a product of some of the things that we have discussed during our committee, wanting to make sure that we have our homeowners associations in our state not in a position where they're doing anything to prohibit or to create hurdles to people that want to harden their home in preparation for a storm. So the bill outlines a number of things related to that, metal roofs, polycarbonate shutters. That's an example I want to point to specifically because some of these features are difficult to put up and take down. And particularly in the summer when it's hot out, I think our elderly go out, they make an attempt. People maybe that don't have the physical ability, that this is an easy task. It's hard to get those shutters taken down. So they're getting fined for not having them down in a proper amount of time. And that's something I think that we need to correct in our law. I don't want anything that our HOAs are doing to be something that is making it more difficult for people to harden their home and prepare for storms. So that is a very simple concept. That is the bill.
Members, are there any questions of Representative Saroy on the bill? Representative Casella?
Thank you, Vice Chair. Chair, sorry. Would this be retroactive? Is this something that's going to be retroactive?
Chairman, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair. It will apply to all homeowners associations, regardless of their creation. So even if their documents were created in the 90s, they would fall into compliance with this bill.
Thank you, Chair.
Seeing no other questions. Representative Valdez, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much. Chair Yeager. So, Representative Saroy, in reference to a follow-up question to Rep. Casellos, so if a homeowners association has fined a senior citizen for not having their shutters down by a certain time, would under our proposed bill, would their fine still be enacted?
Chairman, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair. So that's a good question, and it may be something that we need to polish the language a little bit on. But what this legislation is saying that we don't want any HOA to take steps that are blocking these hardening measures in the first place.
Representative, I see you have an amendment here. Representative Saroy, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. The amendment expands the list of hardening features to include reinforced garage doors, erosion control measures, exterior fixed generators, fuel storage tanks, and other hurricane-related hardening steps. That's the amendment.
Thank you, members. Are there any questions on the amendment? Representative Gant, recognized for a question. I'm sorry, Nixon. Representative Nixon, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Woo. Chair Soroy, I had a question. Will the homeowners association still be allowed to kind of say where the generators or things like that need to be in place?
Chair Soroy, you're recognized for answer.
Thank you, Representative Nixon. So the HOA under the current bill would have to adopt standards and basically work with homeowners in order to accommodate these hardening measures.
Representative Nixon, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Last question, Rep. Soroy. So does that also include, because I can just imagine some homeowners associations calling me, the color of shutters and that type of thing? Okay.
Chair Soroy, you're recognized.
So the way that we envision this working, and again, the language may need to be polished a little bit, and I would welcome your input on that and your feedback. You know, I think that there certainly is a conversation that could be had regarding architectural controls. You know, color, for example, is a good example to use. You know, in many subdivisions that are under HOA in Brevard County, you know, they do have rules in place regarding the color of a roof and whether or not it should be tile or shingle or metal. What I would hope that we could get to is a point where our HOAs are creating criteria and being flexible to say, you know what, we understand that a metal roof, for example, is the most strength that you could provide. We also know that metal roofs today, you know, there's an extraordinary range of colors and patterns that you can choose from. So I do hope that we can get to a point where our HOAs and their architectural review process are being as inclusive as possible on these different products that are out there to balance the aesthetic needs with our desire to see homes hardened.
Follow up, Representative Nixon? No? All right, with no other questions, we will now take public testimony. There is no public testimony. Are there any members wishing to debate the amendment? Seeing no debate, without objection, we will show the amendment adopted. We are now back on the bill as amended. We will now take public testimony. Dale Calhoun, Florida Propane Gas Association, waves in support. And Dale Calhoun waving in support. Representative Soroy, you are recognized to close. I'm sorry, are there any members wishing to debate on the bill? Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Chair Yeager. And Representative Soroy, thank you very much for your thoughtful pieces of legislation. I wish we can make HOAs go away. You know, it's just, that's one of the reasons why you buy property, you harden it, you do what you gotta do to your house to make it a safe place. And I think that sometimes, especially after the presentation that we had early on in committee where we talked about the HOAs and some of the egregious acts that they're doing, these pieces of legislation are long overdue to help protect our consumers. I'm really concerned about our senior citizens, as you so very eloquently described about, you know, their needs and the requirements of having to have these items taken down by a time certain. And, you know, there's some HOAs in my district that are really behaving very, very badly, especially with their senior citizens. And let me tell you what, I wish I had the Thor hammer or something just to make them go away and stop treating our most vulnerable, our senior citizens, you know, that are on fixed incomes, as the way they're being treated. So I thank you for the bill that you're bringing proposed. I wish we could make it retroactive and maybe remove some of those fees that our senior citizens that are on fixed income, let them go away because children, senior citizens, you know, they have a special place in my heart and we have to protect them because we do stand on their shoulders. So we have to protect them as well. So thank you very much for your thoughtful bill. Thank you.
Representative Maggard, you're recognized for debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Soroy, I want to thank you for this bill. My office is dealing with this same exact issue right now. I've had more calls about HOAs dealing with generators, siding, shingles, whatever the case may be for hardening than I have since I've been elected. And I'm so happy you're doing this bill because it will solve some problems in my community for sure. Thank you very much.
Representative Nixon, you're recognized for debate.
Thanks, Vice Chair. Chair Soror, I would definitely love to meet with you, though I don't live in a HOA because I don't like them. However, I do understand at times there is an importance to them, and I just want to make sure that we're not bringing people's property values down as it relates to having really super oversized generators because someone wants to be the biggest generator on the block, that type of thing. And so making sure, that there is some semblance, just to the aesthetic of the properties within the neighborhood. So I look forward to talking to you more about it. Thanks.
Representative Casello, you're recognized for debate.
Well, thank you, Vice Chair. Chair Soror, I think this is a good bill. I think you hit it right on the nail right on the head. I think hardening of our homes in these HOAs, there's many ways we can do it. And aesthetically, the materials that are out there today would comply with a lot of the things that concerns that the HOA has. Having been an HOA president, I know, Representative Maggot said, we'd be fighting over colors of paint and things like that, and it's really stressful. But I think what you're bringing forward here to this committee today, with the materials that are out there now and the colors, shapes, and everything else that goes with that, I think this is a good bill and will help the homeowners and make being the HOA president a little bit easier. Thank you.
Chairman Soror, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. I can't say it any better than Ranking Member Casello, my soon-to-be prime co-sponsor on this bill. And with that, I close.
With Chairman Soror having closed on the bill, Amy, will you please call the roll?
Chair Soror?
Yes.
Vice Chair Yeager?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Casello?
Yes.
Representatives Amnesty? Chamberlain?
Yes.
Gant?
Yes.
Holcomb, excused. Maggard?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes, ma'am.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mello? Nixon?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Shove?
Yes.
Silvers? Yes. Valdez?
Yes.
13-0.
We'll show that bill.
I carried away. Thank you, Amy. Members, by your vote, we will show HB 293, Hurricane Protections for Homeowners Association, by Chairman Soror to be reported favorably.
I don't know if this is day 8 or 50. Members, we're going to stand informally for just a moment. Representative Barrero is on his way over to the Knott Building. He was tied up presenting a bill in another committee, which I understand they just finished. So as a courtesy to him, I'd like to take up his bill today. We'll stand by for just a moment. All right, members, if you'll please take your seats. I appreciate everyone standing by. Representative Barrero, thank you for your quick trip over here to the Knott Building. You're recognized to present House Bill 377.
Thank you, Chair Soror, Vice Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you so much for waiting for me. I was presenting in another committee and jetted over here. So House Bill 377, it's just very simple. We've passed this through this committee last year. Hopefully we can get it across the finish line again this year. It basically just makes sure that vehicles for hire, limos, taxis, if they have a license to operate in one jurisdiction, one county, or in one city, that would be reciprocal, so they don't have to get 67 different licenses in different in another jurisdiction. That is a bill.
Members, are there questions of Representative Barrero? Representative Gaines, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Barrero, what is the fiscal... So I'm assuming, and you can educate me on this, that the counties or the counties issue these licenses. And if they do, like, what is the fiscal impact that counties would see? Like, how much money does this make it for a county? And would that impact, like, their revenue in some significant way?
Representative Barrero.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Representative Gant, for that question. I think we'd have to see on a county by county or city by city basis. But you know, the objective of this bill is to help to, you know, avoid unnecessary duplicative fees for, small businesses for limos and vehicles for hire. You know, each, I think we would have to look at each jurisdiction to see what exactly that fiscal impact would be on in any particular jurisdiction.
Representative Gant for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what was the, like, why is this policy in place now? What's the state interest to change it if it's been a policy for a significant amount of time?
Representative Barrero.
Thanks, Chairman. It's really just to avoid the unnecessary duplicative fees. I mean, if you're operating a vehicle for hire, you're crossing county lines or crossing, you know, city lines. It's just overly burdensome for, you know, these types of businesses to have to pay these duplicative fees in different jurisdiction, or to have to re-register and go through that hassle of providing, you know, all the documentation in order to get a license in that particular jurisdiction.
Representative Gant for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much are the fees, like in Miami to Broward or in South Florida in general?
Representative Barrero, you're welcome to, if you know, you're welcome to try to answer.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative, I will certainly look that up and get you that answer.
Representative Nixon.
Thanks, Chair. Rep. Barrero, so walk me through the process. If your bill passes and gets signed into law, I want to start a vehicle for hire program. What do I do?
Representative Barrero, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Thanks, Rep. Nixon. So you would just have to register with the county with that jurisdiction to get your license to be able to operate in that particular city. What this bill does is just make sure that you don't have to get, you know, a license in over 400 different municipalities, 67 different counties, in order to be able to conduct business in there. It would be reciprocal to another jurisdiction.
Representative Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. So I don't have to, so the license is through one county and it's transferable, as opposed to me going through the state to get a license that's transferable through all?
Thank you, Chairman.
Representative Barrero.
Thank you, sir. Yes, it's correct.
Members, additional questions? Seeing no additional questions, we'll now move to public testimony. Derek McGee, Florida Airports. Council waves in support. Members, we're now in debate. Is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Barrero, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll waive close.
Having waived close on the bill, Amy, please call the roll on House Bill 377 and announce the vote.
Chair Saroy?
Yes.
Vice Chair Yeager? Yes. Ranking Democratic Member Casello?
Yes.
Representatives Amnesty? Chamberlain?
Yes.
Gant?
Yes.
Holcomb excused. Maggard?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes, ma'am.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mello? Nixon? Yes. Robinson?
Yes.
Shove?
Yes.
Silvers? Yes. Valdez?
Yes.
13-0.
Show that bill reported favorably. Ranking member, do you have any closing remarks?
Just quickly, Chair. Once again, great meeting. We had a lot of bills in front of us today, and we got through them in a timely manner. This is one of the more interesting committees that I sit on, and the work that we do here is really really self-satisfying. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Vice Chair Yeager?
I would reiterate the same words. This is a great committee, and we do great work here. So thank you for the opportunity again.
Representative Silvers, you're recognized for a motion. Representative Silvers moves we rise. Without objection, the committee is adjourned.